Welcome to Platinum Property Training's podcast, where we will be talking about business, money, and let's not forget the economy, real estate, and bringing in real inspirations. These are people that are doing some great things in our world. Like, share, add this to your playlist, and subscribe to keep track of our updates. Okay, you beautiful people, sit back, relax, let's listen, and let's get down to business. Craig, you're very, very welcome back to Platinum Property. You're familiar with the operations here?
Yeah, I was on a few months ago with Loken and obviously had a good time. So it's good to be back and have a chat.
Lovely stuff. Well, what we'll try and do tonight is we'll try and dig out a little bit about you, a little bit about how you can help some members on, and maybe how you can share a small bit of your education too on what you do and what you're really passionate about, which is obviously land.
Yeah, of course. It's not everyone's cup of tea, is it, coming out the ground? So I think I found a bit of a niche, and obviously with my QS background as well, that kind of helps. So yeah, hopefully I can give people a few nuggets over the next hour or so.
Lovely stuff. Right, so take us back a little bit. You landed over to Ireland, you came over to Ireland for a weekend?
Yeah, do you know, I initially come over for Punchestane. I think it was like 2014-15, and met my wife, and the rest is history. So she's from Blessington originally. So yeah, I moved over, I think November 2016, maybe the month before. But I've been a QS before that for maybe, 12, 13 years. So my dad was a builder, and he always, I think he probably knew, if I can get the son in as a QS, I'll obviously get him a foot in the door with main contractors and whatever down the line. So I did that from the age of early 20s, and to be honest, it never really pushed the right buttons for me. I never really liked working for other people. I was, even to this day now, when I do a few bits, I just prefer to do my own thing.
Yeah.
And just, I suppose that involves being a QS or a contractor. You can be in an office all day or a site cabin, and I find myself climbing the walls.
Yeah.
I always remember one day when I was QSing, the developer I was working for at the time, they used to have a land agent, and he used to come in. He was a young lad, and he was the bee's knees, and he'd always have the brand new Range Rover, and he'd have a great suit on. Do you know what I mean? And he always seemed to be controlling his own time.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Everyone treated him like royalty, and I thought, I wouldn't mind. That sounds all right, land agent. Do you know what I mean? And I kind of put it on the back burner until about maybe 2015, 2016. And when I moved over to Ireland, the penny had dropped, and I was like, I don't want to do this forever. There's more to life than it. Ultimately, if I was a QS, I'd just get a pay rise in line with inflation or whatever, or somebody decided to throw me a few grand every year in there. This is not for me,
Yeah.
So I started just teaching myself about land and property. Started reading stuff on planning portals. I'd sign up for a few courses. Back in the day, all the stuff was in the UK, so I'd be flying over, and then I landed on a few good ones, and that kind of increased my knowledge base. But I know a lot of people would start off with HMOs or the smaller stuff. I was quite clear that I just wanted to go into land straight away. I felt like I had the construction experience to do that.
So that was what
I was saying to you just before we started. I think it was 2017, 2018, myself and a pal, we kind of got into things, trying to find land off market, and started sending the letters and all that type of stuff,
Yeah. And then what actually happened then? You actually start sending a few letters out, direct to vendor letters out.
Yeah.
You started to get a bit of response back.
Yeah. Well, I think back, I cringed a bit. And I also think, how did I manage to do that? Because what we used to do, my mate is an accountant, so the deal was I was kind of looking after the construction and the land finding side of stuff, and he was doing the admin at the time. But we'd send the letters, and then we'd have a phone call. I'd have a phone call from a landowner in, say, Cheltenham in Gloucestershire, and then the next day I'd be on a plane, right, to visit a landowner. And then I'd go and have a conversation with them, and, you might have to go meet that landowner two or three times. It's just so inefficient. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. You might spend a week's worth of time, and God knows how much money on flights back and forth on a deal that 9 times out of 10 won't come to fruition.
Yeah.
So, but nonetheless, right, we managed to find 4 deals in the end. But like, you know, to say we made a lot of mistakes along the way was unbelievable. Like, and especially like, I think the biggest mistake that we made was like, I was maybe too proud coming from a construction background to ask for advice. And my friend was kind of like taking everything that I said as gospel because he didn't have a construction background.
Mm-hmm.
So the one thing I could change from that time now would probably be just to, like you're doing, is to seek out advice from somebody who might want to tell me stuff that I don't want to know.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. And I try and say, stay in your lane as much as you can. And, you know, you can obviously see the system that we have here. We try and bring in professional people in their league.
Yeah.
And then usually when they tell you, you know, this is how you do it, we listen.
Yeah.
And then try and move forward. It makes makes making a decision a little bit easier.
Yeah.
But where were you from back in England then? So when you were in England, you were living in...
Yeah, well, I'm from Wales initially. I moved up to Cheltenham when I was in university. So I was there for like 4 or 5 years.
Right.
Then I moved back to Wales. I was in America for a bit, just doing a bit of like the old soccer coaching over there for a few years. And then I moved back to Cheltenham, and I was there for another 5 years, like I said, till 2016.
So you started then, obviously your QS was your main focus.
Yeah.
You'd figured out that the QS was slightly boring. You probably reached your peak in that, and then land was the main thing. When you're going back to land again, when you were saying these lads driving around, I remember a property event, one of the first ones that I was at here in Dublin, and there was three lads in pinstripe suits, and I was like, geez, these boys have money. And, you know, we were obviously networking, going around, and one of them came over to me and said, you know, I'm so-and-so. I won't say his name because he's probably watching this.
Yeah.
And I was like, what do you do? And he goes, I just buy land. And I was like, you buy land?
Yeah.
He's like, that's it. Three Range Rovers outside when nobody had Range Rovers.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, fucking hell, there must be some money in this buying land if these three lads can jet around in these brand new Range Rovers and make good money. But they were buying land for maybe 50 plus units.
Okay.
You know, up to 250. Like Greystones was a big spot for them.
Yeah.
They were deal makers. They were, and they were obviously very, very tuned into the way you are too. How profitable have you seen this market if you pick the right one and plan it correctly? Like,
yeah, I mean, like the sky's the limit, obviously, for the bigger developers. But you'd also see guys doing well trading land. And that was the one thing, like when you sold all these courses and whatever, the one thing that always appealed to me, because even though I'm from a main contracting background, I don't really enjoy like the nitty gritty of being on site. So land trading was perfect. It was like you find land with development potential, you add value with good planning and design, and then you sell on the land. Like, this is great. I don't even have to put a spade in the ground, you know? So there's guys out there doing really well out of that. Like, you know, you'd be talking, you know, making millions of pounds or euros every year. But it's not as simple as that. You imagine these guys get a lot of deals wrong. Obviously, the market sometimes dictate what happens as well. But you really need to know your stuff in terms of planning and design.
So,
you know,
let's just try and simplify this back a bit.
Yeah.
Because I know there's a lot of people that will be listening to this that have probably identified a little bit of land. And I know you're going to be doing little bits of training going forward, but they might have identified something that they know, okay, a couple of houses can go in there and that's something I can do. And then they're like, oh, I have to go to a planner and then I have to go to an architect and I have to go to an engineer.
Mm.
So for you or for them, like if they were to sit in, say, my shoes, say I found it.
Yeah.
Obviously, how do you simplify that for me? If I found this a potential site that I know it's obviously off market, I know I can do a deal on it.
Yeah.
What do I do after that point? How do I, where does it go from you, with you? Like, you know, normally we go to a planner, say, planner, we might never get to meet the main planner, but you'd obviously put a set of drawings together and it's a little bit boring and you have to wait an awful long time and it's a good chance you're probably not going to get planning.
Yeah.
How do you step in?
So I'll come on to where I step in a bit. In terms of planning, I think I was saying before, like the most valuable bit of advice I had was to go onto the planning portal and read planning reports, right? Because that's basically the answers to the exam. This is planners telling you exactly how they're thinking and they're writing it down in a detailed report, you know? So if you were to read one of those every night for 6 months, you'd be just like a different person in terms of your knowledge base, in terms of obviously planning permission. But like, I mean, that is everything. Because if you don't know what you can do with a certain land use in a certain area, then you couldn't possibly know what the development potential is, you know?
Yeah.
And that's where it all starts. And then after that, that's when you start really putting the meat on the bone. So I always say to people about learning to assess site-specific constraints. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people like think because you've got planning permission to build on something, you're going to make a lot of money, and that's not the case, you know? So you need to know how to design units efficiently, you know? So not just efficient in terms of unit sizes, but things like reducing communal spaces, like don't put too much road in, knowing where to locate that road on a plot, you know? Knowing where to locate sites in order to bring services in, okay? So it's identifying the planning potential, but then learning how to reduce or incorporate any costs into your land values. And I think this is where a lot of people are going wrong. They're overpaying for land or property at the start, and then they're on the back foot throughout.
Straight away.
Everything starts with land values, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, yeah. So if someone comes to you and they found a plot of land,
yeah,
what's the sort of first thing you do? I'm not going to read them drawings, you're obviously a really clever dude because they can be complex trying to read them.
Yeah.
Sometimes we just want to see they've got approval and got all these things to follow in the middle. But I mean, somebody that may find this piece of land isn't going to read the way you would read it.
Yeah.
So how do you take them? How do you take me through my first steps to try and get this idea there, something that I found off the ground?
Yeah. I suppose, like, you'd always start with looking at the existing land use. So it might be, I don't know, residential, industrial, community. Like, there's you know, a dozen or so potential land uses. And that'll give your options moving forward from there. So I'd always start with that. And like I said, then I'd move on to the commercial side of stuff. Like, this, basically, anywhere outside of, I don't know, an hour of London, hour of Leinster, sorry, in Ireland, makes things very commercially difficult to stack. If you imagine, right, generally, like all other things being equal, to build and finance a development, you do well to do that for, let's say, less than 300 quid a square foot.
Yeah.
It's very few places outside of Leinster or within an hour commute of Leinster, of Dublin, sorry, where sales values exceed that 300 quid a square foot. Mm-hmm. So then all of a sudden you have to be creative. So people might be looking at longer term build or rent models or doing deals with local housing associations and EHBs, which, like we said earlier, are just a pain in the ass to try and get anything across the line with in terms of doing a deal.
Yeah, it seems to be a really, really slow.
Oh, yeah.
Well, not knocking them, but I mean, they're probably on a weekly wage. We're not. We're trying to get a deal done. We get paid by results.
Yeah.
They get paid by the week.
Yeah.
So we're under a slightly different pressure than they are. And I mean, you're facing that at all times as well. You get the first phone calls, fine. Then they might go missing for a month, or you can't get an answer to something for a month, which is really, really frustrating, especially when they need these things built fast.
Yeah. But like we said earlier, that's like we're problem solvers. You know, so whilst you might be like a dog with a bone, it's a they flick off at 5 o'clock and they're out the door. But I don't know. Like you said, just going back to what we were saying about assessing, you know, the initial potential.
Yeah.
I think the other thing to consider is not just the build cost side of stuff, is learning to assess the technical constraints as well. So what a lot of people will do is, we had the conversation earlier about, how much does it cost to build in X area? Well, that's fine if you know it's going to cost you 250, 300 quid. A lot of people don't know about abnormals. So that might be, you know, grain contamination or party wall issues or, I don't know, issues with services. Nobody really factors this into their land values because we're programmed to think that everything is going to be okay. Mm. And it's only when you make that mistake yourself and you have to pay for it yourself, do you actually learn to do this stuff properly moving forward? And that's kind of where I got the way I am today. Like, the first deal I did was an absolute disaster. There was like Japanese knotweed made ground. We had issues with trees we couldn't take down because it was the wrong time of the year. Ecology issues. A main mains fell water going right through the center of the site, and just buried our heads in the sand, ignored everything. You're just like, it's fine because we're building 9 houses, and you cannot build 9 houses and not make money.
Yeah, we've got to.
Like, this is the problem is playing out for people all across Ireland now.
Yeah,
they've got a planning permission which they've worked their asses off to get, probably going through on board Planola, only to find nobody wants to buy their site because the design's crap, or they're not in the right area for the sales values. So what I try and do is project forward to the end and say, right, this is well getting planning permission. How are you going to make money? You know?
That's the hard part. Again, do you get many people would come to you with design, say, I know you're at the
self-build show.
Do you get many people rocking up there trying to figure out maybe is their design correct? Maybe their planner might have just, not saying planners do this, but maybe they just threw an application together just to get it out the door, and then it goes into the process. Do you ever look at, when you've got your own time, do you ever sit down with a client maybe and say, this is completely designed wrong?
The single biggest inquiry I get is self-builders saying, I've got these plans, I've got a planning consent in place for my self-build, obviously, but my budget's 300 grand. And all the builders are telling me this is going to cost $500,000. What do I do? Right. So it's no good me saying to them at that point, well, you should have come to me before you spoke with your architect, your planning consultant, your engineer, whoever they're using. But I mean, in reality, that's how you should do stuff. So I'd actually only put a post up earlier on LinkedIn just saying to people about how you pull together a proper architect's brief.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're not clairvoyants. They need information to work from. So, you know, tell them how many square feet you want your unit to be. Tell them what building method you want to use. Tell them about the issues with the ground contamination at the bottom of the garden. Tell them you can't connect to mains drainage because it's 200 meters away across a river or whatever it might be. Do you know what I mean? And people are not doing this, and then their engineers pricing.
Now, would they be not doing it because they're not educated to do it? Are they not doing it? Like, is it's not... Or is it pure ignorant on their behalf? Because like, do you feel like they're not doing it because they simply just don't bloody know?
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, that's fair to say, isn't it? Which is obviously why we're here. That's what we're trying to do. Yeah. But yeah, no, I'd say that, like, what I would say is I would expect that I do see consultants out there designing stuff and putting in plan applications where I know a consent's not possible, or you know, it's going to be above their budget. Like, you've got to remember, architects are architects. They're not quantity surveyors. They're not estimators.
Yeah.
You know, and what the mistake they'll make is, it's particularly in rural or semi-rural areas, you'll have a lot of people all go to the same planning consultant, right? Because he knows the man at the council, right? Yeah. And your engineer might design something, I don't know, 2,000 square foot and say, right, I know Bill down the road, same house type, he done it for $500,000. So they give the same house type to Mary down the street, not thinking about the specifics relating to the site, the ground conditions, whatever it could be, 1,000,001 different abnormals of every site. But Mary's cost is 700 grand because the engineer didn't really factor in those items.
Yeah.
And this is what's playing out all across the country. Right. You know, so I said, I can price up stuff that doesn't exist. So you kind of need to get our architect on board before I can come on board. But what I can do is help you write the proper brief.
Yeah.
To your architect, so he knows exactly what he's designing. And then hopefully those initial designs, even if they're planning drawings, they reflect something like what you can afford to build.
Yeah.
You know?
And again, take that scenario again where someone may have 300,000 capital to build.
Yeah.
And the builders are coming back. Because we know, which is, I think me and you spoke about this before in depth. I mean, the building cost nowadays has just gone crazy. So some builders are quoting 250,000, some builders are quoting, you know, 350. In the drop of an ocean, there's 100 grand somewhere. Yeah. It doesn't seem to be...
No. Consistency, like.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem to be... The gap is huge. Yeah. And is that because they're busy?
Mm.
Like, I'm finding it really difficult to get trades at the moment. Good trades. Yeah. Plenty of bad ones.
Yeah.
But again... What do you do in that scenario then if someone comes in and they're desperate? They're desperate to build this thing. They might be in, you know, rented accommodation that they now got their little baby and they want to get it up off the ground, and you have to give them that little blow of.
I mean, like, there's no such thing as like an exact build cost, right? So, you like you said, it depends on people's situation in terms of a build. If I'm super busy and I'm being asked to price something up, I might throw a bigger price at it because I'm not really fussed if I get the job or not. So if I throw an extra 50 quid a square foot or whatever, great. Yeah. If I get the job, if I don't, I don't. And also, I can guarantee you, if I send the same set of documents out to three different builders, I get three different prices. Now, they might not be vastly different, but sometimes you might have 50% between number one and number three. And it all depends on, you know, like I said, their personal circumstance, but also how much they're willing to spend in terms of time and money on quoting things. Like if you're a builder and I send you a set of, say, 20 documents and I say, can you price that for me? And I got, and they know you've got three guys pricing it. They're very unlikely to spend more than half a day on it if you're lucky. They'll probably spend an hour and give you a price per square foot with a load of contingencies built in.
Yeah.
So part of it does lie with the landowner. Like make sure you're giving people succinct information and make sure it's easy for them to understand.
Yeah.
You know, but like I said, there's no such thing as a price per square foot to build because everyone is
completely different.
Yeah, yeah, exactly that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like every refurb process you go into is completely different.
Yeah.
You may have a gauge that you're in around this 40, 50 grand mark or 200 grand mark. Mm. But again, they're always completely different because they're going to throw up different problems each time.
Yeah.
So with the QS aligned to what you're doing now, it obviously makes you're fine tuning this piece of land because you can see past just the planning. You can see obviously putting the proposal together, maybe to give out to a building team.
Yeah.
You can see a lot more in that. Tell me a little bit more about maybe, you know, just these infill sites or sites that you may be seeing all the time or maybe your guys are seeing or what maybe someone that's listening to this may have seen a site and they don't know what to do with it and they're thinking, well, I give Craig a ring on this one or what are you currently looking for at the moment?
Like, so a big part of what I'm doing at the moment is I'd say maybe half my time is I'm working with larger developers looking for schemes. I don't know, they may be looking at stuff maybe 50 units plus with a planning permission in place. Now, what I started off doing a few years ago over here was looking for stuff without planning permission, looking to get that planning gain. I've had to change my stance on things because of the state of the planning system. Like, if you're, what I used to do is I'd ask a landowner and you'd incentivize them to do a conditional deal. So that might be an option or a promotion agreement or a joint venture or, you know, whatever it might be. And I'd be in the UK, I'd be able to say, right, well, planning decision in probably 12 weeks. In worst case, we might have to go to, appeal, which is a few months in the UK, right?
Yeah.
Over here, what do I do? I ask for a 3-year option agreement in case you, like, it's just going to take the piss off. So I got sick of the no's. And to be honest, I was asking questions, which I wouldn't even, of other people, I wouldn't even accept myself. Mm. So now I just focus on finding good sites with planning permission. And as part of that, what I'll do is I'll appraise the sites for the developers. So I won't just get them a link and say, there's a planning permission there for 60 units. I'll read the planning conditions. I'll have a look through any abnormal build costs, like a lot of apartments. So you're looking for, basement car parks, undercroft, all that type of stuff they want to stay away from. So to answer your question, that's a big part of what I do. But I'm also now trying to get back into the development side myself as well. So I'm looking for sites, maybe something between 5 and say 15 units.
Yeah.
Where I can just work with local authorities and AHBs to bring those forward.
Yeah.
And like I said, I'd still be doing the one-off self-build clients, that type of stuff as well.
Yeah.
But
so self-build clients, I'd say, would be the bread and butter.
Yeah, yeah. Like that's why I like keep the show on the road. Do you know what I mean? And then allows me the time to do the other stuff. So I'm kind of edging forward 10% every year from one side into the other, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And obviously funding planning applications and all that jazz, that costs money as well. But you said about the types of site, like there's so many opportunities out there at the moment. I see them all the time in every town, village and city that I go through. Might only be infill plots. Opportunity for backland developments. My favorite would be land assemblies. So that's merging two or more plots together to create a bigger plot for development.
So just slow it down on that now again for anyone that might not understand that.
Yeah.
You've got two or three plots at the back of a site that you're trying to buy up.
Generally, they'd be at the back. But like sometimes you, like that doesn't always have to be the case. You know, you could always have two semi-detached units, for instance, with a large side garden. And if you were to merge those plots together, you'd get a larger plot.
Mm-hmm.
And some stuff is just like one part of the folio might just provide the access. So you might have an acre at the back of a row of houses, but there's no access.
Yeah.
You think, well, if I can only get an access through the back of there, I can build 20 houses in there. Mm. And when you start looking at Google Maps for this type of stuff, you'll see they're everywhere. But it's, I suppose it's learning to be creative as well. And the other thing is once you start knocking stuff down, so it, like it obviously it becomes difficult. So I'm always looking at, for instance, lean-tos or garages or like jerry-built houses.
Yeah.
Where, but, well, actually, if I knocked that down, that wouldn't really lose much value. And this is what it would create.
Yeah.
You know?
One of our lads just coming to my mind as you're talking there now, because you're sparking loads of different things in my head. He has a site and we were talking about knocking, well, the option was there to knock the house down.
Yeah.
Maybe build a row of houses or maybe knock part of the house down, pull a wall back.
Yeah.
You've got two or three houses then in the corner.
Yeah.
We weren't sure because it all boils back down to build costs as well. So you would have had to try and do up a set of plans, then try and get them priced.
Yeah.
Seeing is it worth knocking the original house down?
Yeah.
We might talk about that offline later on. I think
no,
that's definitely something you could definitely help with.
Yeah. Well, like as a general rule, I would say to the guys, if you're knocking something down, right, and every area is different because of sales values. Mm-hmm. If you knock a house down, you have to build four houses just to get back to parity, right?
That's the problem.
That's the rule. Yeah. Right, and I was only looking at an application the other day for a colleague. It was out in the Hoth, which would obviously be one of the highest sales values per square foot in the country, right, with a sea view, beautiful plot. I've actually done a video about it. It'll go on in the next few days. But a developer, or it was actually a landowner, they proposed to demolish an existing house, sea view, and build eight apartments, right, eight two-bedroom apartments. There was a bit of basement parking, right, which would have cost. That was consented 3 years ago, still not built, right? And I guarantee you, unless it's something I don't know about it, the reason that's not built is because it's not commercially viable, right? So that tells you, if you can knock down a house in Hoth, right, and build eight apartments with a sea view, you're going to struggle to do that pretty much anywhere else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it all comes back to like replacing that square foot with enough to make it viable. And it's so difficult.
Yeah, because you're taking down a big chunk of it.
Oh, exactly, yeah.
So you'd be more into the proposal of keeping the original, maybe knocking down if there is a lean-to garage, there's a couple of laneways that are probably wasted there, pull it maybe back, remap it and then go for it.
Yeah, you're always looking to retain as much value as you can, you know. Yeah. And what's helpful as well with like, so in January they revised the planning guidelines, and I won't get into the detail of that, but the old guidelines used to be 22 meters from, so if I was in my house looking at you, there would need to be 22 meters. They used to call it the nipple test, right? So if I was in my bedroom looking at you, if I could see your nipples, right?
Yeah,
22
meters.
And but then that's reduced to 16 meters,
right?
Right. So if you imagine that opens up all sorts of opportunities for architects with overlooking distances to maybe build additional units, and also they can get creative with window angles and all that type of stuff. So again, like it's all about having somebody on your design team who knows about this stuff. If you're not working with somebody with a creative eye, then the chances of you maximizing that land value is very difficult.
Okay. Yeah. And all these obviously have good value once done correctly.
Yeah.
Because everyone, no matter where you are in the country, you've got little builders in little towns that if there's a little piece of land there, well, of course they like to build right in their own, you know, drive 5 minutes around the corner and pop up two houses.
Yeah.
You know, stick it in their pension, whatever they're doing, it's value to them.
Yeah.
But again, if you've got the wrong design team and they create this wrong house,
you've
just entered into maybe a 2-year process.
Yeah.
And we're facing this experience now. We've a site that, you know, it's we need to fix what we have there.
Mm.
May have done it wrong the first time, but we're 2 years into the process now, which is painful. Mm. I was saying to you earlier on as well, like if you're buying a rental property, you buy it, you get all the messing done and you're building a couple of weeks later.
Yeah.
Whereas the planning, you really have to slow everything down and ease the jets. What about in your opinion, if you've got, like, say, a bungalow?
Yeah.
And you've got a site to the side of it, say.
Yeah.
Are you thinking in that certain scenario, if there's 4-story houses across the road from it, say, and you've got the bungalow here, do you have to put in bungalows on that site, or what way the council looking at stuff like that? It depends.
When you first thing you do when you start off, aside from the planning, like I said, is you'll go through, you do your marketing, your comps to see what sells the best per square foot and compare that against your build cost. Mm-hmm. They usually find with bungalows, the rule of four still applies.
Yeah.
You imagine you're usually just on a single story with a bungalow, so it's not so difficult to get your extra square footage in.
Mm.
You know, so there's loads of those plots available. I think the big problem in Ireland is a lot of bungalows add to the local vernacular. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? They'd all be like, you know, centuries old probably, and the planners don't really like you getting rid of them.
Yeah.
Generally.
Yeah.
So it's not as straightforward as maximizing the value. It's actually, can I knock this bungalow down?
Mm. You know? But if we go back to the scenario again, if someone, like, say, working alongside you with their plan permission, and obviously they go to their planner and all at the end.
Yeah.
But you're trying to map this whole equation out first.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
And then presenting it in. So my theory behind this is you're putting a lot of time into getting this right, this build right. Mm. Are these 5 units or 10 units or 50 units or whatever you're doing?
Yeah.
And you're putting all this time in with the client first to present something that works.
Yeah.
How many times do you see projects that you know if they would have got to you first, they would have worked? Maybe they've been refused because a bad designer.
The most difficult thing for me, and there's no way around this really, is I get people send me a site.
Yeah.
Right. And they'll say, I need you to do me a development appraisal and tell me if this works, right? And I pick it up and I look at it and it's in the arse end of Mayo, right? And it's got planning for 10 houses. And I know sales values in our area are like 200 quid a square foot. And I already know, you can't build those for cheaper build those for any cheaper than you'll get back in terms of sales value. So it's not a deal. I know after 5 seconds,
yeah,
you know, but for some reason, somebody, or maybe it's themselves, or they haven't sorted out good information, has let them run with a 30 grand planning application, 10 grand yeah. worth of fees, and they've done all this only to find it out. Somebody along the line there, a professional, knew this didn't stack up, you know? Yeah. So I'd almost be doing myself out of clients, if that makes sense, because I've got nowhere to go after I know that the sales values are 200 quid a square foot.
Yeah.
You know? But what I like to try and say to people is, if you're looking at a plot of land and you don't know if it's going to work and you don't want to spend 10 grand on planning consultants, X amount, if you come to me, I can do all of that stuff at a high level. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not a planning consultant, I'm not an architect, but I can tell you at a high level whether or not you can make a deal that works here. And you pay me once and you don't pay the guys. And I think that's the value that I bring. Mm. And I can usually do that within a week or two as well.
Much quicker than trying to get it in and a file started. And
it
makes sense. So where are you going to go with all this? Like, where is people seeing these sites, bar from Mayo? And where are you seeing that there's value to be had? And, like, is there any certain, no, you can't really say this, but is there any certain counties that are a little bit easier than other ones you're just getting completely turned down from all the time? Or
you would, don't get me wrong, you would have your nice areas outside of Leinster where the sales values do go, north of that, like Kinsale, for instance. Do you know
what I mean? It's a great spot.
You know, even parts like Rosslare and whatever. There are spots around the country, but they're isolated, right? So I think, like, if you're really looking to do deals and find sites where there's not so much competition, then I'm always, like, saying on the post or whatever, working with local authorities and housing associations is the way to go. Like, I don't know how many houses they got to build over the next God knows how long now, but they're not going to meet that target without building right across the country.
Yeah.
So things might not be so easy now, but they are going to have to change. Like, you know, and I know the government are taking steps to try and produce these sites across the country. And, you know, like I said, there are so many planning consents I see for those 5 to 15 units that they're going to have to be built out eventually. So it is a pain in the ass trying to get in contact with people. Mm-hmm. But if you start going through what they call an expression of interest process, so you submit the site to the local authority, and then you basically, they'll means test the site. So they'll basically look at, you know, the financials and say, right, are we getting value for money with these units? And if you can deliver on that, then there's definitely an opportunity there.
And how are you finding, like, working with them? Are you getting a good response? They're obviously under pressure. We know the planning is a fucking mess, right? Yeah. Let's just clear that now. Mm. Something's causing that to be a mess. But they're obviously under pressure in there to build houses. There's serious pressure on the government to develop houses out. And they are taking it serious. So when the likes of you put a proposal in, say an expression of interest at the very start, are they working with you? Is it a blank wall you're finding there?
Call a spade a spade. It's very difficult for me to get that area. Like, ultimately, if you imagine they're interested in scale, right?
Yeah.
So unless you're going to them with units generally at the moment, of like, I know DCC, unless it's 30 units, very difficult to get that area, right? Like then it is tough. But I suppose my point is that there's no alternative. If you want to be developing, that's one of the problems you're going to have to solve.
Yeah.
You know, so you, especially down the country. So, yeah, no, to answer your question, it's a nightmare. And calling a spade, all the best planning consultants and whatever, they work privately because they get paid more money, right? And then obviously you're left with, you know, people who are maybe not so good at public level. And then they're under-resourced as well. And then, like, so when they're out the door, they're out the door.
Yeah, yeah.
So it is a pain in the ass. But you're better off getting in now than trying to get it in the door in, say, 2 or 3 years' time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and start building those contacts. But I suppose what I'd say is if you have got the right deals, I was only speaking with somebody who does the funding today, like there are options there to get these. Like, you just imagine you're taking the sales risk out for a finance provider. If you've got heads of terms agreed with a local authority, that's a safer bet as you're going to get in terms of an exit strategy. And I know they'll go down to profit on cost of, like, you know, 10, 11, 12%. Okay. It's not that difficult to make those deals stack if you can buy the land at the right price.
Yeah, yeah, good point. We have a lad in the group. He has approval for 96 units. So,
okay. Yeah,
yeah. He funding might be an issue at that one.
Yeah,
it's a big project. Again, any tips on say one of our lads? I know you're working with a few lads in our group.
Yeah, which is
brilliant.
Yeah, and doing fantastic. A few of the lads who obviously just started doing smaller developments now, but it's good to see people, you know, going out and doing stuff.
Yeah. And obviously with your expertise leaning in there, I know the lads are well capable of building. So the building isn't the issue to them. It's maybe covering out maybe all these scary different things that you're talking about here today that we generally wouldn't see because we're obviously, you know, our eye are on seeing units maybe in the garden. Okay. Your eye is on completely different. Your eye is on the muck in the ground and making sure the site will physically work. Where else do you see these opportunities lying for my guys and girls to keep their eye on? Or maybe someone that's listening to this.
What? Well, like, isn't, where would they find them?
Like, value, so they can, look, everybody likes making money.
Yeah.
So where are these sites that they could see? Is there any particular areas that you constantly keep seeing them? I know you're mad on Google.
Do you know what? Like, yeah, well, I'd be flat out on the planning portals, to be honest with you. That's where I'd be going blind looking at the portals. I always like, what I like to do is, giving away secrets now, but I like to look.
We can cut this.
So a planning consult is 5 years generally. I like to look at stuff. I used to work backwards. So I'd be like, right, so let's go back to 2019. So stuff that might have a planning consent that's running out, only 12 months left.
Right.
Okay. Now I'll have a look on Google Earth and I say, right, is that site been built out? No. Okay. Let's have a chat with the landowner because he's definitely more incentivized than he was.
You're chasing the motivated seller as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's got time is his enemy now.
Yeah.
You know? So that's where I'm having success with the bigger stuff. That's probably come at the cost of the smaller stuff. So what I'd have to do is, because, you know, I can't do everything.
Yeah.
If I have sites and there's, say, 50 or 60 units, sometimes I'll have to scroll past stuff, which is 4 or 5 units or 8 or 9.
Yeah.
So my plan is now, I've got to go back and revisit all these. Mm-hmm. But my problem is I don't want to get involved in the nitty gritty of construction, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to be worried about foundation depth or, you know, whether a bit of steel's gone in properly. I want to be working at a high level, finding sites, okay? And I want somebody like a builder into who loves the building and is great at the building to do that, you know? Yeah. So that's the missing piece of the jig for me. But to answer your question, if people, you know, want to find sites, I think it's off market on the planning portals is the place to be. It's very rare that I find stuff on the market that stacks up. You imagine if a site goes on tomorrow on whatever, you know, Daft, right? Yeah. And it's got 15, 20% profit in the deal. How long do you think that stays there for?
But you just triggered again. There is a site that we actually showed here one night. Maybe I've showed it to you, but it did not make sense.
Yeah.
Like you 2 minutes on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
This thing doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And it's in a position and it has full plan permission just for 3 houses. Mm. But to knock down what's there and rebuild the 3 houses, there's no money in it.
Yeah.
And that thing is sale agreed and done.
So, yeah, well, that comes back. Like I always say, the people who generally buy sites on the market, they're the biggest idiots, right? There's people who are willing to take the biggest risk and they probably haven't done their due diligence properly.
Yeah.
You know? Do you think the stuff that's stacking up, right, is going to make somebody alarm? Do you think that even makes its way to the market? Do you think the agent doesn't have his property developer mate?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know yourself, like that's the way this thing works. The good stuff doesn't really... Now, what you will find is a lot of developers will know how to add value to existing planning consents,
mm-hmm.
Which is where you might find a deal. But again, you're coming with a time implication. Go back through the planning process.
Yeah.
You know? So, I don't know. What I generally find is, and I do it all the time, back in the day, I wouldn't anymore. I'd look at something, or a landowner might give me a price, say I want 30 grand a unit. And I think, oh, that doesn't seem so bad. And then I go and read the planner's report and the place is full of Japanese knotweed. Right. Or they can't get an Irish water connection agreement. But there's always something wrong. You need to be the person who can sniff out that issue.
You're like a private investigator at the back end, reading all this information that we don't do. And I mean, because we have a couple of applications in at the moment, I'm only starting to educate myself on reading these things.
Yeah.
And the amount of files that are uploaded is
huge. Yeah.
So it's there's a lot of content in there. There's a lot of reports. There's a lot of talking back and forward to each people. And I think when you're reading these things, can you actually see, okay, I can fix that?
So, like, well, I'll give you an instance now. Like, this is only last week. Site in the centre of Dublin. Planning permission for 13 apartments, right? The AHB is all over it. Like, can't get enough wood about apartments. So wrote to the landowner. He called me back straight away. He was keen as mustard to do a deal. And I asked him how much he wanted per unit. And it was really reasonable. Something's not right here. What's wrong with that? So go back, read the... Because I won't read the reports before I send the letters. It doesn't make no sense. Yeah. There wouldn't be enough hours in the day. So read through the planner's reports and then get to the Irish Water. They would be... a consultee on the planning application, and it's there. There's a big water main running right across the site, mm-hmm. right? So, and they're saying there's no build over agreement to be accepted, right? So the site's undevelopable pretty much, unless a developer can come in and divert the water main. In the centre of Dublin, it'd be very difficult. And wouldn't have any change out of £250,000, I'd imagine, even if you could do it. So, yeah, I mean, I think I'm pretty good at sussing this stuff out. And I'm pretty good at coming up with an alternative. The problem is it's very rare that it's viable to do it.
There's always something.
Yeah, because ultimately that's coming off the land value. Mm. It's not going to come off the build cost, or it's not going to come off developer's profit, for instance. You know? Yeah. Maybe a snippet of it. So
how do you value, like how would someone that's listening in on this and they know they had got something maybe in the front garden or in the corner of the garden, they know... They may have got letters in the post or how do they value what their garden's worth? Like without going, okay, they may have a garden that they've loved all their life.
Yeah.
You know, there's 3 or 4 units can go into the thing.
Yeah.
They could be hitting out at 65, 70 years of age. Mm. They're just like, can't keep cutting it all the time.
Yeah.
We're going to go to Spain. We're probably going to sell that eventually. How do you put a value on something like that? Well, like what's an over value on something like that?
So you'd always do what we call the residual valuation. So it's in keeping it simple. It's the end value, gross development value, less all of your costs. Mm. Obviously, if you're a developer, less your profit. And that's your residual value. Just on those corner plots now, I was actually speaking to a couple last week who got in touch. They were they were looking to sell their corner plot. And what I said to them was, don't sell that to a developer. Sell that to an owner-occupier, somebody who wants to build up. Because straight away, you take your 20% profit out of it. Then that goes on the land value.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this is what I'm saying to people now who are maybe want to be first-time developers and they want to start building stuff. Don't look for one, because your market is saturated with self-builders who don't need profit in the deal. They'll buy it whatever they can afford to borrow.
Yeah, so that makes sense. First-time buyer for us. So
you can't compete.
Yeah,
it's impossible unless you're overpaying for land, in which case you're not competing.
Yeah.
So I always say to people, at least go with two. The market is less, and you might get a deal. Like, you know, and there's, to be honest, once you've got your site set up, you've got your contractor on board. Is there much more hassle building two than building one? No. Probably not.
No, definitely not.
You know,
I always see a little scheme of maybe 8 or 9 units.
Yeah.
Sitting there together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Build cost, then again, how do you find with people, clients coming back to you maybe, and build costs have like gone through the roof or gone up another 10%, or you might have quoted something. I'm sure you went through this pain many times. Mm. You've quoted something at this level and it actually 16 months or 18 months later, the builder kicks in and build cost becomes a problem.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that from your QS past to
your new you're past? Obviously always feeding contingencies into your appraisals. So that's the only way you can manage that, I suppose. You know what I mean? In terms of like how you feed your build costs in, like I'd be working with, you know, big developers, or I know they can build at, I don't know, 130, 140 a square foot cost. But then I'll also be seeing quotes from builders down in Dublin who want 400 quid a square foot. Do you know what I mean? So it all depends on what type of structure you're going for. You're bringing a main contractor in, are you going to get a project manager? Are you going to completely self-build? Like, is Bill from the pub going to do your rewiring for you? Yeah. So everything is different. But like I said, it's, in terms of forecasting, all you can do is put a contingency in there and hope for the best. And you imagine as a developer as well, you can't have everything your way. When you're making your offers, if you assume your GDV is going to go low and you don't allow a contingency and your bill costs are going to be 200 quid a square foot, you'd never get a deal.
Mm.
So you have to
you'll take a risk. You're around looking at stuff all the time thinking, could have worked, should have worked. And then there's some people that just make it work.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's the exact same in the investment world. You look at some projects and you might have one or two projects on at the time. You'd say, well, look, I can make that one work because, I'll lose a bit on this one. I'll make a bit on that one.
Yeah.
But I think with building, people are a lot more scared because they know that they can be handed a bill anytime of 10 or 20 grand.
Yeah.
Which is a problem. I know one of our last trainings, I briefly heard one of our guys saying that they never tested the land before they build. Just gives a little bit of an
This is the one reason I like the coming out of the ground side of things.
Yeah.
Maybe like imagine when you're dealing with an existing structure, right? You're never really done. Mm. Really. You know what I mean? You're always peeling back nasties generally, especially when you get to the roof forever.
Yeah.
With the ground, I know if you go through this process initially, right, then you're kind of done because everything else you're in control of. So it was one of the guys on the course actually. It was just saying, just get a ground investigation survey done. So it wasn't expensive. Like, you can get surveys done for 4 or 5 grand. All he's done is rocked up with a digger, with a man for a couple of hours, dug a few trial holes and established that the ground wasn't great, right? He's factored that into the land value and adjusted the price accordingly, right? There's not too much in doing that. And things like connection agreements, this is all stuff you can do before you purchase the site, like subject to's. So, and again, with, you might have existing services running over the site. This is all stuff you can find out. But unfortunately, 90% of people don't want to risk. They don't want to risk the 3 grand to save 300 grand.
It's just pure or brain dead, isn't it? Really?
Yeah.
Like, and it's really irritating the way people won't do this type of stuff. Because again, that, and he was very honest what he said. The first bill that he got was 25 grand.
Mm.
You're not talking pocket change here. This is serious money.
Yeah.
So for someone not to do all the investigations at the start, it just does not make any sense. Now, again, where I'm going back to it is, if it was someone doing a self-build, they just mightn't be aware of all this stuff.
Yeah.
Hopefully after listening to this podcast, they're like, Jesus, maybe I should start to investigate a bit further.
Yeah.
You know, because if you do run into these things, you've gone off to your private investor, you've gone off to the bank, or you've raised capital.
Yeah.
And that capital is needed for the build, and you hit these problems.
Mm.
You're Donald Ducked. You're in down. You're not just going to put that on a credit card and hopefully you can, you know, wash it out. You're in a problem. You're in a situation where you have to try and get out.
You're paying for that land value from day one as well. So every month you don't put a spade in the ground, it's costing you a lot of money. But I don't know. Like for me, so you, as a developer, like, you know, I think people like to think, oh, there's no money down and whatever. It doesn't exist. You need that pot of seed capital.
Yeah.
You know, which will always go on from one project to the next. You're always going to be losing money on some deals at the start. Like, you have to test the water on a few until you find the right one. And that's all part of the process.
Yeah.
Which maybe why the barrier to entry is so high for development.
Yeah.
People don't want to spend that money. Mm. You know? And it's, I suppose it's the same with consultants as well. Like they want paying, like the amount of consultants I've had to pay to not even get a planning application in. You know, tree surveys, ecologists, you know, bloody, like, you know, topographical surveys, like a million and one times. You pay the money, you don't get it back. And that's the risk you take as a developer.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's expensive. I know one of the developments we've on,
yeah,
I was telling you earlier on, we've sunk thousands upon thousands in different things.
Yeah.
I'm like, you might as well just open a hole in the ground here and just keep throwing it in. It's very frustrating. But
it is.
Again, we didn't do all of these things that you're talking about tonight.
Yeah.
Because if you would have been in this, you know, if I would have met you 2 years ago, you bet your bottom fucking dollar I would have done it, because I know the level of detail you put into these things. So I definitely would have been investing in that first.
Yeah.
And then put a proper plan in place and then went forward. But look,
it's the same with the existing building survey. I know you got one of the lads on the course, haven't you? Does the surveys.
Yeah.
And I always say to people, like, they come to me with the bill cost of an existing refurbishment. Where's the existing building survey? I'm going. Well, I don't know what I'm pricing. I haven't got a clue what's going on with this building. Do you know what I mean? And again, what's, I don't know what they cost, 500 quid a grand, but like, people, you have to commit, like, go and spend that money. Otherwise, whatever I give you is just bullshit.
Yeah.
I'm just making assumption after assumption. And then you're going to expect me to stand over the bill cost. And I obviously can't do that.
Well, that's Tom Rooney, I think you're talking about there. They're detailed with surveys.
Yeah.
So Tom would slip in and do loads of different surveys for us. And he does them for all the group as well, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
But they're detailed reports and they're well worth the money.
Yeah. As a QS, I don't know how you would price anything without it.
Yeah. So it's information all the
time. Yeah.
Lovely stuff. All right. Well done. Well, look, we're starting to get to know you a little bit better now. And I know a lot of people think of land and they're like, land, I'm not going to do it. But again, I always remember these three guys in the suits. I'm like, these boys have just made a lot of money and they're not doing something that they're buying something, selling it. Mm. They're obviously doing something in the middle, which takes a lot of work.
They'd be adding value with good planning and design or rezoning even, you know?
That's
another way. That's more strategic stuff, which is you're in the proper planning, I suppose, then, in terms of, you know, making great arguments for rezoning of land and whatever, which I don't even get involved in generally. But that'd be another level altogether.
Yeah, well, they're making some good books without having to put a shovel in the ground, which is something that I'd be interested in investigating a bit further. Have you any other golden tips for anyone tonight that may be listening in that, you know, might want to get more involved in there? Again, when someone comes through property training and they realize you've got tenants, you've got all this responsibilities, sometimes they go, look, I still want to get involved in property, but I'm just not 100% sure where I want to go now. Maybe this is the gig for them.
Yeah.
They're like, that's the one. Now I need to, you know, try and educate a little bit more on that, or maybe get up to date a bit more, or find out a bit more what Craig does.
So I always say to people, you have to learn to fail fast, right? But always do it with the benefit of the knowledge of people who have already failed before you. I mean, there's some mistakes you don't have to experience yourself.
Yeah,
you know, and just seeking out unpopular opinions as well, which I am a lot of the time. A lot of people, I say that's just not viable. And they, you know, you mean I got planning permission for 25 apartments? Don't care, it's not viable. So you have to listen to those opinions, because it will cost you a lot of time and money if you don't, unfortunately.
Yeah, and again, you're spending a lot of that word seed capital.
Yeah.
All the time, because there's no return on this thing until it's built.
Yeah.
So there's money going out and out and out. Any golden nuggets to finish on then?
Yeah, you can follow me on Land Options Island.
Land Options, yeah.
I generally like try and put a post up a day.
Okay.
You know, and it could be anything from sharing land that I found that hasn't been built out for other people to maybe seagate themselves, or tips on planning or build costs, or there's loads of bits and bobs, like, you know.
Yeah.
So even if you take on one bit a day from, or one a week from those, you know, people generally find them helpful if you're into this type of stuff.
Yeah, and a lot of people are.
Yeah.
Again, then for the small builder that might be out there that might want to do a little bit more digging, but he's a bit scared.
Yeah.
You obviously can work alongside him. You can help him out. You can maybe train him a little bit more on what to look for and whatnot. I know you're working with one of our lads already, which is brilliant.
Yeah. So like I'd be working with, like I said, people who are just into building, I suppose. I'm always looking for guys who can build efficiently. And, you know, obviously I find the deals and they do the construction element. So if there's anyone interested in that type of thing in any part of the country, interested, I'm going to chat. And then, like I said, I still do a bit of the QS and the project management side of stuff as well.
Brilliant.
So if anyone's looking for help on their own developments, or if they're maybe a contractor doing stuff for clients, you know, that's something I can help out with as well.
Perfect. So Land Options, Ireland. Yeah. And I know there's a new one coming, isn't
there? Yeah, so Leinster Land and Build, that'd be the quantity surveying and the PM stuff that I'm doing.
Is that up running at the moment?
The website's up and running, yeah. Okay. So it's leinsterlandandbuild.ie.
Lovely stuff. Well, we'll get it out to a lot of people as well. And I know you have a little training program coming shortly on Platinum as well. So that's going to be something to look out for as well if they're...
Yeah, yeah. So we said I was just down at that self-build course last week. And I'm literally hundreds of people asking me, you know, very basic planning questions. So, I say planning questions, self-build type questions. It could be planning, construction, build costs, whatever it might be. So I'm just going to produce like a very quick course. It'd be 60, 90 minutes, just showing people how to do this stuff high level before they go and pay their architects, planning consultants, quantity surveyors, etc.
Yeah.
So that'll be up and running in the next 3 or 4 weeks, I'd say.
Brilliant stuff. Brilliant stuff. Well, Craig, look, you've been great to welcome you back to Platinum. You're a man with a wealth of knowledge when it comes into this space. And I think working alongside of any of our members, I'm very, very comfortable with. So welcome back and well done.
Okay, thanks, man.
Yeah. And if you want to reach out to Craig, you can reach out and follow his content on landoptionireland.ie or on your Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and follow his content and begin the process of starting to educate yourself. Okay, we will chat to you all next week.